Kicking off hour number three in the Truly Hard Seltzer studios of Fan Run Radio. I've been tabling this discussion for a while, thinking maybe it wouldn't have to happen. But like, what has were we duped? Were we duped early with Vescovi when he goes for 17 against LSU? Because since then it's been a taper. Point totals. I think there was one game he had one more point than the previous one. I think he had like 11 and then 12. Then I think it's gone 7-5-3 his last three games.
That's correct. I don't think we were duped. I think we were duped for 6-9 from the three. Like, I don't know how many players can do that on a game-by-game basis, but I don't think we were duped at all. I almost think, and you can get to your thoughts, like your point that you're going to make, but I almost think Vescovi's playing very passive now. He's not wanting to turn – no one wants to turn the ball over,
sure.
But I think that's in his head, right? Like every time he drives down the lane, how many times have you seen him take on two defenders in the past three games? Zero?
Well, I mean, his minutes have gone down. He hadn't had nearly as many opportunities to do so.
But he
– like, we know that Barnes is tough on point guards, right? Like Lamonte Turner, that was the first thing he told Josiah James after his retirement. He's like, he loves you. Just trust that. But, like, we saw Bone. He kind of dipped and said, it's not for me. Like, this is going to sound worse than I mean it, but, like, has Barnes kind of broken Vescovi? Like, is he already that beat down? Or is this just he comes in, no one's seen him before, he has a hot start, and now teams realize, hey, press him early, trap him early, get him to turn it over, and then he's going to go sit on the bench for 10 minutes. Because to come in and score 17 against an LSU team that I think we all agree is pretty good. Now, granted, Tennessee shot the ball well as a team that day. But Vescovi, man, like he's gone from like someone we thought could maybe be some type of savior for the season. And the last few games, so Missouri 12, he did have, what, like an 8-0 run by himself?
Yeah, he was
late in the game.
He was really one of the reasons why you won that game.
South Carolina, you had 13. You won that game by 1 point. I mean, without those 13, obviously that's not good. But then 7 in a loss to Georgia. I guess I see that one. 5 in a win over Vanderbilt. And then only 3 against Ole Miss. His minutes have gone, what did he play the first game, like 33, 34?
34. So 34, 34, 38. And then the past three games, it's 20, 24, 22.
Yeah, the past 5, according to ESPN, and I'm sure the minute numbers are a little bit different depending on where you calculate the seconds in, but he had 19 minutes against Missouri, 5 turnovers, 12 points, 23 minutes against South Carolina, 7 turnovers, 13 points. And then, Billy, to your point, like, turnovers go down against Georgia to 2, only 7 points. He did have 5 turnovers against Vanderbilt, only 5 points. 2 turnovers against Ole Miss, 3 points. So, like, I said it when he first played, like, the turnovers were worrisome. But at what point do you take the good with the bad and just let the guy play the way he plays? Like, what does this team need? Obviously, against Vanderbilt and Ole Miss, you don't need much from him because those two teams aren't very good. But if you're going to beat a Kansas, right, if you're going to beat the Kentuckys, the Auburns, the Arkansas, do you need the aggressive Vescovi back who might be a little bit more loose with the basketball to create for everybody else? Because, David, to your point, like these last two games, like, yeah, Tennessee's looked good. I still really don't know. I mean, I know Vanderbilt's bad. I don't know how bad Ole Miss is. Record-wise, they're not good. These are two teams that are winless in the conference. Obviously, Kansas is pretty damn good. We'll see against A&M. But, like, I just feel like while the turnovers worry me, to get the best out of him, don't you have to just let him play his game and then hope that the turnovers decrease naturally? Because by this artificial, like, juking of the turnover number through, you know, hard coaching and stylistically impacting the way he plays, yeah, he's not turning it over. He's also scored 8 points in the last two games. Like, what would you rather have? Would you rather have Missouri, South Carolina, Vescovi, where you're getting 13 points, but you're also getting 5, 6, 7 turnovers, or this I mean, I'm not saying he's not impacting the game, but it's 3 points, 5 points. I know they're wins, but I'm saying they probably won't be against teams like Kentucky, like Auburn, certainly like Kansas.
For those games, you need what you saw from him the first couple of games, at least from a
against the bigger teams, right? Yeah. Because this is a team
just work with the turnovers and just hope people get back, and you're not giving up a lot of fast break points.
That was kind of what I was saying as soon as he came on the court. You know, like just the offense that he created, the way the team, the way the offensive flowed, he looked more engaged, and I thought the turnovers that he committed were fixable and he could still have his style of play. But now it looks like he's second guessing every decision he makes, especially driving the lane, that he's not, like you said, he's making no impact at all. I will say though, he's just kind of missed his outside shots the past three games too. I mean, he went 1-for-4 against Georgia, 1-for-3 against Vandy, and 1-for-5 against Ole Miss. So if he would have hit, you know, two more a game, like, he's still hovering around that 10 points a game mark.
Yeah.
But I think I think that kind of goes back to him not wanting to make a mistake. Like, we've talked about it. You just let shooters shoot, right? And you don't want them to think about it. If they're open, shoot it.
It feels like he's still shooting. I mean, he obviously chucked up 9 against LSU. But, I mean, after that, it's been 3-6, 4-3, 5. Like, it's not like it took some huge jump. I agree with you. Like, the first game maybe kind of took us all for a ride as far as he shot 9, he made 6. Holy cow, is this guy the next Chris Lofton as far as just percentages? But
I almost think his creation, though, creates – a three-point shot for himself, because the way that he's able to spread the floor, he's able to get defensive off, you know, off balance when he can drive the lane.
And he's really good about filling space,
right,
and allowing the swing back or the kick out to happen. Like, he's just good at that.
So when he makes a pass, he's finding the open spot, which creates that open shot for him. I can't really recall. I know he missed one wide open shot against Ole Miss. I can't remember the other ones.
I can't either.
If they were good shots or bad shots or rush shots.
I only remember him taking one what I would consider bad three, and it was against LSU. We got the rebound, they kicked it back out to him, and he made the next one. So, like, it was deep. It was earlier in the shot clock, and I remember thinking, like, that's one that'll get you pulled. But then it got right back to him, and he made it. So it's like, oh, well, that, we'll forgive that one. I would love to see his turnovers and how many of them are leading to buckets for the other team. Because, Davey, I'm with you, like, a turnover is obviously bad, but a turnover is compounded when you turn it over and then your teammate doesn't get back on defense, or it leads to a, you know, a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 break. Like, there are different turnovers. Like, running the baseline to try to make a skip pass and then your foot hits the line, yeah, it's a turnover. It's very different than getting your pocket picked at half court and giving up a dunk. So I'd like to see, like, the opponent scoring percentage on his turnovers, and then where are they happening on the court? Because he's gotten called for quite a few travels. He got called for a carry or two. He stepped on the baseline a couple times. Like, those are not the ones that worry me. The ones that worry me are when he's ISO'd against somebody just crossing half court and the guy just completely rips the ball out of his hand and goes in for a layup.
Yeah, I think you just mentioned, like, three that happened in the South Carolina game where he traveled, like, to start the game, I believe. Like, he carried it. Was that the South Carolina game?
Yeah, because it was Georgia where Teddy Valentine was saying, hey, don't carry the ball.
And then the South Carolina game was also where he went baseline, stepped on the line. Mm. So that's already – he's already down to 5 during that game.
Right.
That's his
– I mean, outside of LSU, which
that was his
I feel
first
like
game.
LSU, I still feel like there were a couple
– He had two travel calls for sure. Yeah. He tried to make a pass across the court, which
that,
is never going to work.
That's a bad one.
He's going to learn from that, obviously.
Yeah, that's a speed of the game. Welcome to the SEC. LSU's really athletic. I haven't seen him make that type of a mistake. Now, he has lost a few kind of driving into, like, the key area, and then I don't know if he just doesn't know what he wants to do with the ball, but they just basically run into him, the ball pops out, and then they're going the other way. But I wonder if this is – I realize everyone wants to kind of blame Barnes because it's the, oh, he was really good when he first got here scoring the basketball, and now he's not. It's because Barnes has beat him down. Like, I wonder if this is just, like, paralysis by analysis, not necessarily, like, hard coaching or change your style of play. Like, let's not forget, the guy's been in the United States for, like, 2 weeks. He's adjusting to college life. He's a freshman. I don't even know if he's 18 yet. Like, there's a lot going on, right? Like, classes, practice. He admitted, like, he was not in as good a shape as he needed to. Not that he was in bad shape. Just playing SEC basketball, it's a different level. So I'm just wondering, you know, you're fresh out of NBA high school, which is just so weird to say. You come in, like, you're free. I don't think classes had started yet, or maybe they had just started, but you don't have a workload. And now all of a sudden, all that stuff is kind of compounding and catching up. Like, you didn't know much of the offense. Now you're tasked with knowing all of it. You didn't know all the plays. Now you have to know where all five guys are on the court at all times. Oh, by the way, you've got a big test coming up this week. Oh, by the way, we're traveling, and you've got to get, you know, close. Like, I feel like there's a lot that maybe could and would suppress development early. I'm just wondering, is this taper, like, going to go back up? Like, do we see the flashes that we saw against, especially against LSU? Like, I think that's the one where, yeah, 9 turnovers, but you take the good with the bad, and the guy had 6 threes and 18 points. But the last 3 games, 7, 5, and 3.
I mean, I would like for him to have a Missouri type of line. 12 points, couple rebounds, couple assists, and if you have 5 turnovers, you have 5 turnovers.
Is that the number, right? Like 5?
I mean, he had 5 against Vandy. Again, he didn't really even need him against Vandy.
No.
In the second half. Like, that felt like that was Josiah Jordan James' game, that where he just came out, he controlled the tempo. Which I will say, I mean, you know, James is running the point a little bit better now, or he has the past 2 games. Now, granted, Vandy and Ole Miss, so does that move Vescovi more to the 2 guard, where he does take 9 threes, not 9 threes a game, but there's games where he goes 6 for 9 from 3.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm not ready to call them interchangeable, but I actually do like when they're on the floor together and they mix up who starts the offense, who brings the ball up the court. Because teams lately, and I'm sure you guys have noticed this, like, they've been pressing us, like, at least 3-quarter court. Like, they're trying to trap, they're trying to force turnovers, and we've kind of responded by doing the same thing. So I feel like a lot of times you cross half court and the ball's just in the hands of Josiah Jordan James or Vescovi, and then the offense just goes. I don't hate that, but I do wonder, to your point, like, is that a permanent move that should be made, or do you just kind of bring him along slowly and hope that, you know, over the next 3, 4, 5 games, he's the one running point more and more? Because I think we all see the skill set, right? Like, I don't watch him out there. I feel like if he's confident, the mistakes he's making aren't there. I think it's just he's kind of swimming a little bit. I don't think this is a lack of talent or a lack of ability. It just feels like a new game that he's being forced to play. Like, I have no idea what the talent level's like at these NBA high schools in South America and Australia. I'd say SEC talent, just from an athleticism standpoint, probably a lot different than what he's used to facing. Like, the guards at LSU are quick. They're going to pick your pocket, right? They're going to step in front of cross-court passes that you could probably make 2 months ago.
You made 2 really good points. One is Tennessee has put on the press the past 2 games, which, when you get a turnover on the press or you get them in a bad spot, like, you're just going to try to get points as quick as you can once you have the possession. So, like, Vescovi setting up the offense is just not necessary when you're in
right,
a press.
Sure.
Right. Also, I think it needs to be – you brought this up against LSU. His first game was against LSU. Here's how Tennessee started off the season. UNC Asheville, Murray State, Washington, Alabama State, and Chattanooga. Those are 5 games. His first 5 games – LSU, Missouri, South Carolina, Georgia, Vandy, Ole Miss. Like, that's a pretty tough 5-game stretch to start your college career.
For doing what he has to do, I think the LSU as the opponent to start, like, that's a tough, like, I don't, from an athleticism standpoint, I don't know if there's a tougher, like, welcome to college basketball opponent than LSU. Maybe Kentucky or, like, a last year's Auburn. Like, he got baptized by fire against LSU. And actually, I thought, at least offensively, performed really well. Now, that was a shootout game. You had to have – I think we hit – did we hit 14 threes in that game? It was some crazy number. Like, I get that. I just – I don't know. I was hoping the turnovers would go down, and I realize he's not going to score 18 every game. But the disappointing part is the turnovers are going down, but so is his impact offensively.
You were 13 for 26 against LSU.
13, okay.
Yeah. KenPom keeps this percentage of possession rate on players. Vescovi leads the team at 28.3. So he has the ball in his hands significantly more than any other player on the team.
When he's on the court, is that how that?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. He even, like, so just to put it in perspective, Lamonte had a percentage of 29.4. Vescovi's 28.3. So as a college freshman against SEC opponents, he has the ball just as much as Turner did when Turner was playing.
And he's splitting more time at the point. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Like even when he's on the floor, he's not bringing it up every time as Lamonte was.
Yeah.
That's kind of strange. Does that maybe mean that the ball gets stuck in his hand a little bit on offense? Like when he's not running point?
Yeah.
Which would make sense, right? I'm not saying that to dog him. I'm just saying, like, if you're confused or – you know, teams are trying to trap you, and you're holding it longer because you're.
Huh. That's one thing that I did notice, and I think Barnes really hates is Vescovi takes 4 to 5 more dribbles than he probably need to, or that he probably will in years to come, once he understand. You know, one of the best offensive possessions against Ole Miss was, I think the ball maybe hit the court like twice. And they were in the half-court offense. Like, it was just pass, 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 shot. I think Vescovi dribbles a little too much if I have to find a knock on him. But, again, that's kind of his style to create offense. So, do you take it or do you limit his creation for 2 turnovers?
Man, that's tough because I'm sure you guys have. I've noticed that. Like, when he gets the ball and it's not like we're running, like, the spread, right, where everybody runs to the corner and then you let him go ISO. But it does seem like there have been a few times where he's trying to make that first move. And I don't know if it's a mental hesitation or if it's a foot speed thing, but it seems like guys can stay in front of him a little bit easier in situations like that. Yeah, maybe just get the ball out of his hand. Like, I'm all for, like, him starting the offense and running the offense, but it seems like there have been a couple times where – and, I mean, you could do this with Lamonte a little bit because I think handles-wise and speed-wise, he could get by some people. Bowden's done it lately. But I just don't know that Vescovi is that point guard to take you off the dribble and get all the way to the rim. And in those cases, I feel like there have been a couple times where I think his teammates could do a better job of coming out to help him to get the ball out of his hand instead of kind of leaving him there on an island. Because not only are you in better defensive position if he does turn it over, but if he can just drop it to you and then you get it back to him, you're saving a possession. So I feel like it's a little bit of everything. That statistic, though, that's with splitting time, the fact that he still has the ball in his hand on 28% of the possession, like, that is
Brennan Tyree 29.5. So he's right there with Ole Miss's best player. Cassius Winston, Michigan State, 29.9.
Who leads the country?
Marcus Howard at Marquette. Yeah, most people know who that is. He has it 38.4% of the time.
I think he averaged over 30 points a game last year.
Makes sense. So what's, I mean, again, maybe Saturday is not the game to judge him by, but moving forward past Kansas, because if it's Dotson on him, he might be in really big trouble. But, like, what's the expectation? Like, what do we want from Vescovi the rest of the way? Maybe we can talk about this on the other side. Because of the addition, well, not only the addition, but you lost Lamonte Turner. Like, I've said it all year. Like, you're kind of having to relearn this team on a week-to-week basis. It seems like now you're stable as far as personnel. How much better can guys like Vescovi, Plavzic, even James, Gaines, I realize it was Ole Miss, but, like, Kamwa actually looked like he knew what he was doing against Ole Miss. Got you 10 points, a couple of rebounds, and that's someone who, over the last 6 games at times, had looked like he was swimming a little bit out there. How much better can this team get in the next 2 months?
I know the knock on Vescovi is his turnovers, and one of the reasons why I really didn't mind it and I took up for him is because he leads the team in assist rate, which no one talks about.
Even with the turnovers? Yeah. Is that assist to turnover ratio,
or
is that just assist rate?
I'll check that on the during the break, but it just has assist rate, which no one's even close to him on the team. Lamonte, however, so Vescovia's assist rate's 26.4. Lamonte's ranks fourth in the nation at 44.6. That's why I was okay with how Lamonte was playing earlier in the season. Fourth in the nation. Still ranks fourth in the nation.
It did not feel like it, Billy, at the time. But that's pretty damn good. Pretty solid stuff from Lamonte.
So assist rate is, this is assists divided by field goals made by the player's teammates while he's on the court. So that's actually a very good statistic.
So when you're on the court,
how you're impacting
the
game. Yeah.
Interesting.
Fourth in the nation.
Quick break. Back after that. I'm not one to throw a game away, but I don't know what we can learn on Saturday. Maybe by tomorrow I'll be in on something. Like, it's going to be really hard to judge Vescovi, right, on Saturday, if Dotson's lined up against him?
Yeah, it's going to be Dotson, because unless they just put someone that's 6'5 or taller on him, like...
If that's the case, like...
You're not going to put Dotson on Bowden to keep him from making threes?
No, Bowden does that on his own lately, unfortunately. Not to knock. He's a shooting slump.
Come on.
He's a shooting slump. He's done better about getting to the rim, though. Have we been, like, the last two games for Bowden, like, is that, since he can't shoot it right now, like, are we pleased with him getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line, considering? Because what was he, was it South Carolina? He was 1 of 13 from three. Like, that's shooting your team out of the game. Like, don't do that. At least lately, he's been getting to the line. He's been driving. He's been making layups. Like, I feel like that's what you need from him. Does this team have the capability of, like, finding shots now if it's not Vescovi from three? Like, James, I think, is an okay shooter when he's wide open, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be, like, a knockdown three-point shooter. Haven't seen Plavzic shoot anything outside of about 6 feet. Pons has apparently gone into the Bowden slump tank as far as the three-point shot.
Bowden was 1 of 12 from three against South Carolina. I didn't want the listeners to let you think it was worse than it was.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. What was he from the floor?
1 of 17.
Whew. 1 of 17.
Did get 5 rebounds, though.
Hey. Positive stuff. Good looking out there, Bowden. I mean, I feel like if he doesn't play like that, you should be able to beat the Vanderbilts, the Ole Misses, the Texas A&Ms. Like, do we think Bowden comes out of this shooting slump, or is this just who he is now? Is this because teams like... Because it felt like he was missing wide-open shots against South Carolina. Like, this feels like a shooting slump, and Bowden has been kind of known for that in his time here. Like, do we expect him to come out of that for a stretch of games anytime soon? Especially as guys like Vescovi and Plavzic maybe get a little bit more comfortable out there, and teams can't just focus on running Bowden all over the place. Like, it's weird for a guy who shoots this well to be in this bad of a three-point slump. I don't know that. I mean,
I've seen it happen before. Like, necessarily with him, but like just like other good shooters.
This bad, though?
Jack White was awful last year, man. Like, he had, I think, 26 straight misses from three at one point.
Yeah, I mean, was he a good shooter? Or did he just get, was he a volume shooter?
There was at one point he was over 40%.
How does this team reach, like, whatever their potential is? Like, what has to happen? Like, moving forward, how good do we think?
Vescovi has to create offense. Like, I really can't imagine, like, some of those schedules we were talking, or some of the teams on the schedule you play later in the season. If you can't get inside, like, they're athletic enough defensively to where if you're not making them move, getting some...
Well, I mean,
wide open.
That's what he does when he's on the floor, right? Like, he forces the defense to move. Like, they can't just sit around and, oh, yeah, we're going to switch everything because Tennessee's running their same pinwheel action. They're running their same flex mode. Like, it's basic.
I think Fulkerson's done a better job of, like, taking people one-on-one in the paint. But I don't think you're going to be able to just get it into him super easy against these other teams.
No.
And when you do, like, is he getting, like, going back to, like, volume of shots, like, he's not getting enough. Like, I mean, like, he had 18 the other night, which is something I don't expect to see a lot. Like, maybe they might try to do that a little bit more, but you got to have everybody else clicking. And I personally think you need to try to just speed up the tempo of the game.
We've been saying that for a month, right? Like, yeah. with what you have now and your lack of size and depth on the inside, like, just run. Like, because even your bigs, like Fulkerson, like, he's athletic. Like, he's fast. He looks goofy doing it.
Yeah.
But he can get up and down the court.
Yeah, I mean, if Uros isn't on the court, like, they should be playing fast.
Even for a 7-footer, though, like, I feel like Uros moves okay. Like, he moves – he's all right. He's a guy who's got to kind of find it. Like,
maybe I'm just trying to compare him too much to Kyle Alexander, because I thought Kyle for a big guy.
No,
was,
Kyle could move. Yeah. Kyle was a freak considering how tall and skinny he was to be able to move that fast, and just lateral movement too with Kyle was fantastic.
Well, I think them implementing the press is going to help the tempo a little bit, because you can use the press to speed teams up. You can use it to slow them down, but it also helps create faster offense.
Did you give you might have done this off air the other day, the statistic for Vol scores in the half court?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I kind of remember this. It was like offensive efficiency or something. Was that the stat you're thinking of?
I can't recall off the top of my head. I thought, like,
it was like, yeah, the percentage of your points that come out of a half court,
like,
set
and change of pace, like, or pace of play.
Well, we've been, at least earlier in the season, we were in, like, the 300s regarding pace of play.
307.
Yeah. Still there?
Yes.
Have we come up any lately?
I've actually think you've gone down.
That almost seems impossible, because it feels like they've been running a little bit more the last few games.
Well, the first half against Vanderbilt was so bad, I think it would just even out with the second half.
You actually dropped 100 spots in the first half and then, yeah, climbed back up to your normal level.
That's why I'm very interested to see how Tennessee and Alabama matches up, because Alabama's tempo is third in the nation.
I feel like I watched them play twice now, and I don't see them as a fast-paced team. But what do I know?
I mean, apparently, that's usually how you get a lot of open threes, just playing fast and.
No, I mean, that's people. That until this year, like, that's what Pearl's always done, right? Like, just run, and then it's a lot of drive and kick to the trail guy for the three. I mean, Wayne Chisholm made a living off the trail three because we'd push tempo, and then as he's getting into the half court, he's there at the three-point line wide open for the jumper.
I wonder if that's something they should try to look to do with Pember.
Yeah, I've been wondering, like, how the minutes shake out now that you've got your full assortment of players, because we've seen, like, Pember's still been sneaking in a little bit, but he hasn't been playing a lot. And it feels like that's a guy who has some size and athleticism who can also shoot the three. Also, like, I'm stunned that I haven't seen Plavzic take a shot outside of 5 feet. Like, the guy's got a pretty good stroke. Like, if you go back and watch his highlights from high school, like, the guy can shoot a little bit. Is that a Barnes no-no for your bigs to shoot threes? Because that was I did hate it earlier in the year when we would shoot threes and have nobody under the rim to rebound. Like, I can't stand that shot. And I guess when Plavzic is in, are they, like, trying to just focus on the post moves right now? Because he does need some development in that area, because he's given up – he's made a couple shots, but he's also missed wide-open layups, like, hasn't attempted them because he spins the wrong way when the defense comes and they're on his left hip. Like, if he spins to the right or gives a drop step, it's going to be a dunk, and instead he's almost playing into the defensive pressure.
Barnes doesn't like his bigs to shoot threes, though.
I was trying to think back, like,
I mean, he kind of even had a problem with Grant taking them last year.
He took more last year, but it kind of took the, hey, I'm the SEC player of the year and I can make this shot now. Right. And I'm sure he proved it, like, in practice at times. Like, hey, this is a shot I can make. I can take this and be okay.
I think Grant's been really bad from three in the NBA.
Oh, he missed, like, his first 24. Okay. And then he made it and then gave a thumbs up to Boogie Cousins and got a technical, which was the most Grant Williams technical of all time, to give a thumbs up to Boogie Cousins and get teed up. Thought it was actually kind of ridiculous.
Soft.
Very. Ted Valentine-esque. This
league.
Huh?
This league.
The NBA?
Yeah, it's something else.
Well, your boy Zion last night had a pretty good fourth quarter.
Apparently, he had the best NBA debut as far as points per minutes played in since like 1955 when they had the shot clock.
I mean, he's the best player to come into the draft since LeBron.
I really did not think he would be able to score at the clip. He did, not only at Duke. Like, and it's my own fault, but like when you watch his highlight tapes or his highlight videos that were going out on Twitter, it was nothing but like wide open transition dunks. Like, the guy's got some skill. And he gets off the floor so fast. You were mentioning this. Like, he misses a shot, but then he goes and he has his own rebound before it's even off the rim.
That's what stood out to me last night. Like, he's not going to hit 4-for-4 from three every night. He probably won't even do that again this year. But
no, they like the defense wasn't exactly his face. You're talking about shooting the
but he did that last year a couple times. Like, he had some games where he bombed some threes.
I mean, speaking of, like, having the trail shoot, like, that's, I think, where all his threes came in. He was just the trail guy.
Trail guy.
Just came in and passed it right to him. He was 8 of 11 last night from the field, 4-for-4 from three, finished with 22 points in 18 minutes. So, again, they didn't let him play much, but when he was in, like, it was a different team.
To turn this back to what Tennessee needs to do, I would like to see Urosh take a couple of longer-range shots than just the baby hook.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
If he doesn't have it, he doesn't have it, but
I'm wondering if Barnes is like, I need you to be a 7-foot post player. Like, don't shoot that stuff. Like, this is where I need you for this team.
But that helps spread the court.
No, I'm with you. I'm just wondering if he's like, maybe he was a little bit better at that than he was at the post. And so now they're saying, we just want you to focus on the post for now. And then as you develop and get better, yes, then maybe we'll let you step outside and hit some shots. Because against some teams, it's like we've been saying, like, against some teams, you're going to have to deal with the Vescovi turnovers to create the offense. Against some teams, if you want to win, you're going to have to steal a couple of threes and buckets from guys who don't normally hit or shoot specific shots. I feel like the Plavsic three. Did Kumwa hit a three the other night?
I don't think so. Maybe.
Ah, man, I feel like maybe he missed one against South Carolina or something. I'll have to go back and check. But I don't know. Like, we've been talking about, like, I guess the potential of this team. It feels like you've got some pieces. I do feel like this team's probably just like a bona fide scorer away. Defense has been okay, but the Bowden shot slump not helping, and then the inconsistency from your other scorers. Like, James will go for 12, and then he'll go for 5. Pons will go for 17, and then he'll go for... I guess he had 6. He had 2 late baskets against Ole Miss, but it's consistent. Scoring has been a real big issue.
He hadn't hit a 3 in the last 5 games.
Who?
Kamwa.
Yeah, he's 1-for-4 on the season.
Has he shot 1 in the last 5 games?
No.
Oh. So the Barnes posts no shooting the 3 is alive and well. Take a quick break. Back after this. Final segment. You guys have never seen Outbreak?
No.
Really? About the virus and the monkeys and the town in California that they have to bomb, but then they find the cure? Sorry, spoiler. Okay.
Came out in 1995. Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, Morgan Freeman, Cuba Gooding Jr., Kevin Spacey, Donald Sutherland, and Patrick Dempsey.
It's a great movie. It's a
really
great,
good cast.
It's a great movie. I would recommend it to anybody. I can't believe you guys haven't seen it. It's like a classic.
Where can you find it?
Based on The Hot Zone.
Hot Zone?
It's a book.
Oh.
Is it on Netflix?
Probably not on Netflix. I feel like it comes on all the time on like HBO or Showtime or something, though. It's a good movie. It's a classic. You ever seen Sphere? It's another Dustin Hoffman classic. Never saw Sphere with Sharon Stone and Samuel L. Jackson. Another great cast, by the way. Man, this has to be something we do on the show where we each drop a movie into the bucket and make everyone else watch it.
Okay.
I feel like we've done this. We've had these conversations before, and it just drives me crazy when you guys haven't seen movies that I'm talking or quoting. Like, people on Twitter get the references all the time, and you guys are just like,
in fairness, a lot of the movies were before I was born.
This is 95.
Okay, I was 1 year old. 1 year old in that situation.
1 years. One year old. We're talking about outbreak during the break because of this coronavirus. First of all, it's a really tough name if you're in the
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
I would say the coronavirus, if you are trying to sell cold beer, is probably a pretty bad publicity thing. Billy, what do you know about this? Like, can you clue me in as if I'm a small child with a tiny brain?
Explain it to me like I'm five.
Basically,
I'm just going off what Dr. Bear was saying on the drive yesterday.
Oh my God.
I'm not even making fun
of him. This segment's canceled.
He seemed intelligent about it. He read up on it. I'm giving him credit now. No, it's basically just a virus that spread from human to human contact, or even maybe I'm assuming like if you're just around the person, kind of like the flu. And
so it's not like contact. It's vicinity contact.
I mean, I don't know for sure.
I'm not kidding. Like this in outbreak, like that's what happens. Like at first, it's only a like you only get it through like bodily fluid, like so blood or you know whatever, and then the virus mutates and becomes airborne, and so that's like the basis of the movie. And a town gets infected, so on and so forth. So is that literally what has happened here?
Contagion's the same way. The Matt Damon movie about going from animals and then human contact as far as how the...
In Outbreak, that's what it was. It was a monkey. A monkey transfers the virus to these people in this African village. They all die. Then they quarantine. They're going to try to stop it. But then the virus goes airborne and starts infecting all these other people. Then there's a monkey on a plane or a boat. So on and so forth. So this came from bats.
Contagion was bats to pigs.
Contagion was bats?
Yeah.
And this is literally bats.
And I think it actually happened in China in the movie.
That's kind of creepy, really. You know what I mean?
I know it was a Pacific like, Island nation or like somewhere over in that area.
Like, did they have advanced knowledge of something like this happening? And they made the movie?
Let me read the wiki report real quick.
Scientists in China say that the virus might have jumped from bats to snakes, which were sold in local seafood markets, and then to humans.
And what does this virus do?
It's basically like the flu. Common symptoms include runny nose, cough, sore throat, and possible headache. So the reason why there's a... it's actually here in the United States. A guy, I guess, flew in from China and started feeling sick, so he went to the doctor, and then he had the disease, or the virus.
Dang.
In Seattle, I believe.
I just got a text from a buddy that says there is a city that has now been quarantined with 11 million people in it.
Wuhan, yeah. Yeah, 17 people have died from the virus, and their Chinese authorities are pretty much trying to like shut down Wuhan.
I mean, there's a screenshot of the government spraying disinfectant, like, aerosol style through the streets of Wuhan.
Yeah. In Contagion, yeah, returning Hong Kong was where it kind of started there.
I mean, I'm not trying to make light of anything here, but like remember like the Ebola outbreak and how oh my gosh, and then all of a sudden it like wasn't an issue. Like how worried should I be?
They knew how to treat Ebola.
Is this like...
If you were there, like...
Right. So is this just like a brand new thing? They still don't know how to kill it?
I don't think this virus has been seen before. Yeah, I think that's the issue here.
So it started in bats. I mean, do we not study bats anywhere? Like, do we not know? It's just crazy to me that all of a sudden this mutating virus out of nowhere and we... How many people have died? You said 17 people so far?
17. I think over 600.
And they've quarantined 11 million people in the city of Wuhan?
Yeah, they had to like cancel like 200 flights. Unless there are special reasons, citizens should not leave Wuhan. That's kind of the announcement that's been put into place. I don't know if they're stopping people from leaving, but they're trying to make sure people don't, if possible.
The confirmed case in the United States is apparently in Seattle.
See, man, like I don't, correct. I don't.
They
know.
Say that all trends start in Seattle.
I don't know what's actually coming out of China, as far as like the media reports on it, because
I know
it's probably worse.
That's what I was. Honest. That's what I'm saying. Like, it makes you wonder. Like, if they're admitting all of this, how bad is it actually?
I recently watched the documentary One Child Nation about China and their one child policy that was in effect from like the late 70s till I believe it was 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe no 2015, and man, like just the information that like the Chinese government tries to keep out there as far as propaganda, and just like you really can't trust anything. You got to be extremely careful with what you believe coming out of a really just a communist country in general. But
so you just get sick, like it feels like you've got a cold,
feels like you have the flu, yeah,
and then you just die.
Bear's calling me.
That's really scary.
He's probably got more information.
You want me to answer it?
No.
No.
I mean, we wouldn't be able to hear it, and who knows what he's at. It could be a butt dial. Could be a big accident. He could be calling from the bathroom again. Like, I don't really know if we want to. I don't know if we want to deal with it.
I know what he wants to talk about, but it would be kind of hard. He having a few phone issues here at the station that we're trying to get set.
It might
up,
be a good thing if we're missing Dr. Bear's take on
he
the.
He seemed really intelligent on it yesterday. I was impressed.
I'll give
I'm
him
sure
a call.
I'm sure he's actually done his research on the matter. Like he does stay up to date on this type of stuff.
This is like, it feels not real because it's like everything you've ever seen in a movie. So you're like, whatever. This is like
he hasn't hit home yet, right? Like if there was a couple outbreaks in Tennessee, we'd be freaking out.
I need to learn more about like how it's transmitted. Because it says human contact, but I need to know what that means.
Yeah.
Like, is it skin to skin? Can someone sneeze on me and I get this? Like, do I need to just go lock myself in my my house for, like, the next, I don't know, 2-3 years? Like, we could all just Skype in, you know, just do the show remotely, but together.
Like, I'd prefer that.
Did one of y'all say it was, like, pneumonia-like?
No, is that what this says?
That's what this Washington Post article says. It's like, what we know about the mysterious pneumonia-like coronavirus spreading in China and elsewhere. And talking a lot about the WHO, World Health Organization. Let's see here. Coronaviruses are a large family of viruses that range from the common cold to much more serious diseases. These diseases,
so it's in the cold family of viruses.
Can infect both humans and animals. The strain spreading in China is related to two other coronaviruses that have caused major outbreaks in recent years. Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, also known as MERS, and Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome,
SARS.
Or SARS, yeah.
Wasn't that in China also?
Yeah, that was a bad issue that took place there as well. Symptoms of a corona infection range from respiratory problems, difficulty breathing, fever and cough, to much more severe cases of pneumonia, kidney failure, the acute respiratory syndrome, that's where they'll have fluid build up in the lungs, and death. The elderly, young, and those with an already weakened immune system are at a higher risk of developing severe lower respiratory tract diseases like bronchitis and pneumonia. Health officials haven't identified this latest strain in humans before. That's why, for now, it has the generic name of a novel coronavirus. While they investigate, as it's a virus, antibiotics won't work in treating it. How does it spread? In rare cases, coronaviruses can spread from animals, such as camels and bats, to humans.
Camels and bats.
Household pets are not a threat. Health officials report that's what they believe has happened here. In even rarer cases, the same virus can then start to spread from human to human. That's what happened with MERS and SARS.
And that's what's happening now with the coronavirus.
Yep.
So that's a generic name, so this thing doesn't have like a real name?
Not yet, no. They will eventually name it, but until they gather more information on the virus, it's just going to be referred to as the coronavirus for right now.
In other serious news, you see Mr. Peanut died?
He died to save Wesley Snipes, so can't say it
somebody
was...
had to try to resurrect that career.
I don't know. I think you said it. We'll see some Super Bowl information.
He's going to rise from the ashes of that peanut mobile.
Someone said he had important information on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, they tweeted that right before. The Blitz is next. Keep it locked in right here, Fan Run Radio.